What is good, everybody? Welcome to another Gold Standard podcast. I'm Rob Stats Guerrera alongside Vish Kumar, and training camp is here. Day two is in the books, and we are loaded. We got sound from Brock Purdy. We got sound from Nick Bosa. We got sound from D'Amador Lenore. We got a whole Kyle Shanahan injury thing to get into, Vish. We're here, pedal to the metal. As our old friend used to say, all gas, no brakes.
There's a lot going on. There's already a lot of arguing. We're in mid-season form in 49ers land. And honestly, the news, of course, will probably lead off with before training camp. The most shocking thing, the stuff that we heard about this weekend on the precipice to come up to training camp. I was blown away by it. I'm sure you were. First taken aback that something like that came out because, you know, not to make this about myself, it's of course about the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan, but I was like, what kind of timing is this right before the season? You know, this is, I was feeling something with the Niners, and then you read the severity of it from Adam Schefter, of course, who laid out the list of injuries for Kyle Shanahan. And I don't know, again, not to make it about me, but I feel personally connected to Kyle Shanahan after rooting for him for so many years. Like, I'm invested in him, and to hear those types of injuries for anyone is shocking. But again, I feel like I have a personal connection to a guy I don't even know. And so, like, I'm like really like affected. Man, this happened to Kyle Shanahan. I hope he's okay. So I can only imagine what he personally went through, his family went through, the people actually close to him, all of that. And then let alone how it is coming to the start of the season. Some of the things we heard today with Chris Sims on the recovery for Kyle Shanahan. It's a doozy. It's a huge one to start the season, and it's really unlucky that he has to go through something like this.
It's horrible, and again, I will say this every time. The human side of this is the most important. Kyle Shanahan is a husband. Kyle Shanahan has three kids. The most important thing is him recovering so that he can be the best husband and father and human being he can be. I'll say that forever. We're a football show, so we're talking about the football side of it. And you mentioned Chris Sims and some of the details he gave today on Pro Football Talk Live, and they are scary. Listen to Chris talk about how he found out, which was from a text message from Kyle's wife, Mandy.
She sent us some pictures right off the bat, and it was like, oh my gosh. Like, so just to let you know, paint the picture, you've seen the injury report, the broken ribs, 40 stitches in the face, the broken nose, broken left hand, of course the bad concussion. But when you first see it and it's fresh and some of the cuts are still wide open, I mean, it's jarring. It's jarring. He was this close to maybe losing his right eye, right? The scar is so big right here. And so all that stuff was just crazy to see. And of course, I'm, you know, thinking of my friend, but yeah, it's tough. And he's still battling with this concussion. And yeah, it happened about, what, 10 days ago now, I'd say 11, maybe somewhere like that.
And 13.
13 now. Holy crap.
And yeah, happened on the 14th, and it was disclosed on the 25th.
He's healing. His face looks a whole lot better, but this concussion, of course, being a part of that kind of accident is lingering, and it's giving him issues, and he's certainly still dealing with that.
So obviously that's very scary. I'm sure those pictures had to be just horrible to see. This is Chris's best friend. Forget the football stuff. This is your best friend. Right. You see pictures of their face sliced open and, you know, broken ribs and all that. Terrible. But, you know, to hear Chris talk about that and the concussion is scary.
No, absolutely. And later on in his podcast, I don't know if you have the clip, he also mentioned how he was going to like post a picture on Instagram. I didn't know Chris Sims was active on Instagram to like poke fun at his buddy at like how ugly he looked. He didn't use the word ugly, but just like how he looked, because it's his best friend the way you would with your friend. And apparently Shanahan told him like, dude, I'm not doing okay, which one is just scary because the trauma of suffering anything from like a crash or an accident is mentally a lot for someone to go through. And John Lynch, who I thought spoke really well when he had to handle this situation, as he always does, I thought showed a lot of humanity by touching on that. He didn't just touch on the physical recovery when he talked about it for Shanahan. There's a mental, because it's traumatic to get crashed or go through a crash. Then let alone the injuries and the severity to have to recover from a concussion, which we know is very difficult, despite NFL players constantly coming back within a week or two. It's not necessarily realistic for how normal people are able to react and deal with those sort of symptoms, especially going through day to day, especially at a job where you have to look at a screen from close proximity all day, what he does with how much film he watches. And so this is just like really sad all around. I don't want to like sound negative, because the fortunate thing is that he is going to recover and nothing long-term happened to him or his family. And that's the positive in all of this.
Or the other driver.
Right. Or the other driver. Thank you for mentioning that. But there is an element of like, we have to touch on the football side of it. And it's really a tough start, because another thing Sims mentioned is he is their best coach. He's their leader. He sets a standard for what practice should be. He's on the details, making sure guys are getting better. He's just a great coach as well. And they're going to miss him, his presence, and everything he brings to the table.
I know that the 49ers are, you know, John Lynch said, we're not going to miss a beat. And they're trying to put a very brave face on this. And so are the players. And I get it. They're going to do their best to do everything they can to keep it rolling. And I thought that Chris Forster actually had a good point. He said, basically, what they do, they've already done the install in OTAs, and the first week of training camp is exactly the same thing as OTAs. So, and Kyle's already laid all that stuff out, and so they know what Kyle wants. And so if he can come back relatively soon, that would really minimize things in terms of the impact. But again, just because he's back doesn't mean he's going to be good at 100% every single day. Concussions are very scary, and as Chris talked about on the show, this one is lingering a little.
It took a few days for him to realize, right, that like, whoa, I'm not working the right way. You know, at first, I got in a car accident. And of course, you know, you're going to be a little fuzzy and not normal. But then I feel like it got into somewhere like day six or seven. And it like, you know, you're starting to now, like, hey, I should start feeling better. I should start thinking more clearly, things like that. And I know he was a little alarmed about like, I'm not functioning at a high level.
Concussions are scary, and it's not a linear recovery. You could be doing great, and then one day you see some bright lights or hear loud music, and you take a step back and you have a setback. And I thought Guy Haberman made a good point on his channel. You know, luckily for the 49ers, they don't have night games until a little bit later in the season, because the stadium lights hopefully, you know, won't be a factor, and he'll have more time to recover before that. But yeah, it's the effects of concussions are real. Nick Martin had a concussion on November 30th and missed the rest of the season. So we don't know. No one knows.
For sure. Absolutely. And you don't want to speculate either on how quickly or how fast or how slow someone is recovering from something like this. You want to give them time and space to discover what their own recovery path is. And I wanted to highlight one thing you've touched on, because we're going to go down every layer of this training camp, all of that. But a detail I don't think has been touched on or highlighted enough is I thought the Niners have handled this outstanding in reaction, from how Lynch talked, how Forster talked, how all the players have talked so far. They were just as shocked. Some of them heard it just as late as any of us who are fans, which you wouldn't expect either for news this large. And I thought in reaction, they've handled it about as good as you can handle it for the first 2 days of training camp in terms of how they've gone about their business, maintained what you call the brave face that we can do this without Shanahan and we can go forward business as usual. That just shows their veteranness as a team, given, you know, the amount of depth they have and veteran players who understand that the profession is bigger and the goal that they have is still in front of them. It's still the start of the season. And so I wanted to at least point that out, because there is, I don't want to call it a positive because you don't want to be in this situation, but to me, this is about as good as you can deal with this sort of situation from a team standpoint, what the guy who's stepping up in the interim has to stay in front of the media, and then what John Lynch said in front of the media, which I thought he handled that great.
Once the news became public, they handled it great. But
agreed.
The fact that it took so long to come out and all that stuff, I don't think is a good look.
We could talk about that, but that's what I meant, right? Like, once we're out and they have to react to it day one of training camp, especially the players who had to react on the fly and still show up, practice, not lose that beat. It sounds like practices have gone just as normal too. Nothing about sloppiness or anything missed because Shanahan's not there.
Yeah. And I think part of it too is, like I said, like if they're just repeating the stuff from OTAs at this point in camp, this would, you would think, be the stuff that would be the easiest to kind of reproduce because they've done it all. Shanahan has already laid out the program. Forster's obviously been there for a million years. He knows exactly what Kyle Shanahan wants. The individual coordinators know exactly what Kyle Shanahan wants, which it seems like they have really broken things down according to that, which I think could be actually fascinating for Raheem Morris because there's a lot of stuff coming out about the 49ers defense this camp and some changes that he's making. So it is fascinating. So they have broken it down that way. And again, we don't know with Kyle when he's going to be back, so we can't quantify yet the impact of this, of these injuries. But it, I mean, just day one, there is never a good time for this to happen, of course. But it was like just when we got, yay, training camp is here, boom, they dropped this huge news. And it was like, oh, we're in it again.
It's a little utterly devastating, right? Because it does feel like, as you said, we're in it again, as in, man, the 49ers are the only team where stuff like this happens. You know, we've talked about another, like right before this, we talked about another pretty insane situation for so long, right? The whole voided contract situation with Brandon Ayuk. Never dealt with anything like this, especially for a guy you drafted and then paid after. Like, forget the details of how the situation played out. For me as a Niners fan, like that whole, like, why doesn't this happen to who Seattle drafts and pays and, you know, that sort of thing. That's how I'm thinking. It's another thing on top of it. And one thing I want to add, Rob, I tweeted it as well, and there was some crazy reactions to the tweet. All I really meant by the tweet was, to me, the angle that's not being talked about in this is that Chris Forster out of nowhere has kind of become a head coach, right? Like, the Niners didn't intend to make Chris Forster a head coach. Chris Forster is, of course, like just happy to be on the Niners coaching. He's talked so much about what he had to bounce back from. It was really public. I think the picture is kind of funny, if I'm being honest. It's a little sad. I'm glad he got help and is doing a lot better. But in a facility, like, it's an odd way to be photographed. I thought it was a little funny. And I think it's, like, not even being talked about. But out of nowhere, he's now the interim head coach of the 49ers. And that's like only because of something as crazy as Kyle Shanahan gets into a car accident, breaks his hand, ribs, and face. And now Chris Forster is the interim head coach. Like, how does that even happen?
It's a story that you wouldn't believe if somebody wrote it. And yeah,
Chris not even close. And it's an insane turnaround for Forster, right? Like, 2 years ago, he's like, I'm just happy to have a job in the league. And out of nowhere, he's like, wait, I'm a head coach now?
He talked about it at the podium about he'll always be loyal to Kyle Shanahan because Kyle hired him. Nobody wanted to touch him. He was on the Dolphins. He was coach on the Dolphins. He was doing drugs at the facility. He got caught. There's the picture. Literally, you tweeted it out. You could see it on the stream now if you're watching. He resigned from the Dolphins. He immediately admitted his mistake. He went to drug rehab, and Kyle hired him in 2019, and then he got promoted since then. But Chris talked about he'll always have loyalty to Kyle for that because no one wanted to touch Chris Forster and Kyle brought him on. And now, I mean, he's one of the longest tenured coaches on the staff. It makes sense that he would be like, I understand why they did it.
I agree. And to be clear, like that picture aside, I just thought that was like a funny, like, wow, what a twist. How does life even work out like this? I thought he handled the presser great. I want to reiterate that, like, about it, it's a tough presser to handle. I don't think you can really handle it good or bad. That makes sense. So his grade is like as good as you can make of this situation is what he did of this situation. You kind of leave it at that. But like the other angle to it, right, is that this story with Forster is like a total non-story. No one even cares that Forster has made this complete turnaround and become the interim coach of the 49ers because everybody's on this complete battle, at least online from my purview, of whether this Shanahan news should have come out and why it took 11 days for the news to come out. I know you have a lot of opinions on this, Rob. Floor is yours.
Well, I mean, I made a whole video out about it. The 49ers, I think, should, first of all, they should have released a statement the day after it happened. Hey, Kyle Shanahan was in a car accident. You don't have to give all the medical details. I'm not asking for that, but you should release a statement that it happened. We got a statement from the 49ers the same day Alden Smith died. We knew about Ricky Pearsall, you know, well before 11 days before, you know, well before that when he got shot. We always find out things about players. The fact that Tim Kawakami says he knew something, but didn't think it was worth pursuing because it was a personal matter, which is, it's just not. Kyle Shanahan is a public figure. He got in a car accident on a public street. It's a matter of public record. The injuries from that accident caused him to miss time at the thing that made him a public figure. It's absolutely a news story, and your job as a beat writer is to pursue the news. So I just think that it's crazy to me that no one on the 49ers beat pursued the news, didn't even try, even when they got wind that something might be up. But I've said my piece on it.
Yeah, here's where I stand on this. So whether this should be, I should be privy to the information, honestly, I don't know. To me, being idealistic, Rob, I don't want to know anything about anyone's private life because I don't want anyone to know anything about my private life. And so I'm happy with that sort of arrangement. But the NFL has had this weird thing where they essentially tell you every little thing that goes on with these people's lives, especially as it relates to their ability to come do their job, which is coaching or playing football. The moment something goes wrong, right? The moment a guy gets hurt in an offseason, or Ben Roethlisberger has a motorcycle accident, or anything that would put the guy in a situation where he cannot come play or coach football, it is always reported. Now, in this situation, if you want to say it's a personal matter, that's why it was not touched, I get it. The fact that he got in a car crash, maybe that's a personal matter. You don't want to report on the car crash. But the fact that he broke his nose, has a severe concussion, is going to miss the first day of training camp, has a broken left hand, and has broken ribs is a story because that affects his way to do his job. And I'm not going to speculate on why the story wasn't told, right? There's two angles. There's the angle of why the 49ers beat didn't pursue this. I don't think there's a lot to that story. I think we kind of know where the 49ers beat stands. And this is another example of they don't really give you any information unless the 49ers give them information, which means they're not necessarily independently reporting as much as they're sharing information the team wants to share with their fans. And so that's a slightly different job than reporting. Okay, fine. Reporters want to fight about whether they are or aren't. I'm not going to get into
public relations.
Right. The second angle is, why didn't the 49ers say anything about this and why they wanted to keep this under wraps? Frankly, I don't know. I don't want to speculate. But all I'll say is the only reason people are talking about that is because that's not how the typical news cycle works for NFL stories, especially ones that involve key figures, players slash coaches involved in anything that might affect their ability to come do their job. And that's why people have raised their eyebrows towards it. Again, can I speculate on the situation? Absolutely not. We're talking about a pretty personal situation, as Kawakami has touched on. It would be irresponsible to start throwing out speculation as to why the story didn't come out. But it would also be irresponsible to say, oh, it's just a personal matter, no one talks about it, because there's no news in the NFL that's ever been treated like that. There's no news in the NFL that's ever been treated like that. And so there's a reason this story was not told. I don't know what it is. And those are the two, right? Why the reporters didn't tell, we kind of know it. Why the Niners didn't tell, that's the angle someone has to go find out.
And I'm not comparing situations. I don't mean the severity of what happened, but I just want to point out there was a horrible story coming out of Kansas City today where Eric Bieniemy's son is charged with shooting his mother with a gun. She's in stable condition, thankfully. I believe she's going to be okay. A horrific situation. We found out about that the day after it happened. And I'm not comparing the severity of the situations. My point is, if you want to say the Kyle Shanahan thing is personal, you don't get more personal than what happened in Kansas City. Eric Bieniemy, I don't know if he's the offensive coordinator there, whatever his official position is. His son shot his wife. That is as personal as it gets. And we found out about that in a day. So it's just a bizarre situation. That's all I'm saying. And I'm upset that the 49ers beat didn't pursue it when they knew something was happening. And the fact
are who you thought they were. Herm Edwards has told you that.
No, I know. It's just the
was that Denny Green? I'm so sorry to the late great Denny Green. They are who they
thought. Yeah, it's Denny Green. But just the fact that one that Tim tweeted out, like, oh, there's going to be some news today. Like, oh, I want you to know that I know something, but I'm not going to try and find out what it is, but I want you to know that I know it. Like, that's very condescending to me, quite frankly.
Yeah, but what we're doing back is also equally as hurtful, right? We're criticizing the manner in which they do their jobs. And look, yes, it might be true, but nobody likes hearing that. And I get that from their perspective, too. And I understand why they would be upset about it.
I don't care if they like hearing about it. That's I don't expect
that. That's why it elicits such a reaction, right? And from their perspective, that's very understandable from my point of view, because now that I have a job and I'm a little bit of an adult, Rob, and I'm old just like you and everybody else, I don't want to be criticized on how I do my job. So you know what? Respect. I get why you guys are mad when people criticize how you do their job, but
yeah, you can be mad about it, but it doesn't mean the criticism isn't true. That's just the reality of the situation. And the fact that they act like we should be grateful for everything they report is the part that bugs me.
I think the gratefulness is a straw man, though. Like, nobody is saying that they deserve to know when something is going on in Kyle Shanahan's life. That's not why people are saying this is a weird pattern of news. People are saying this is a weird pattern of news because there's no point in ever when something like this happened that we don't know about it. And so that's why people are like, wait, why didn't we know about this one? I'd have to guess, Rob, if this was another head coach in the NFL, we would know about it the day it happened. So-and-so, breaking news on ESPN, so-and-so involved in a crash, not expected to be fatal, but involved with certain injuries. And then we would hear about it 2-3 days from now, the exact thing Schefter ripped out, which was the list of injuries and the fact that he's recovering and everything we heard about the crash, that nobody was hurt and no drugs and alcohol, all the things that they mentioned. That's how the news is commonly given to us. And so this isn't about people saying, no, Kawakami, you should have figured this out and told me. People are saying, wait, Kawakami, we've seen how the beat or anybody, how the news cycle gets handled in the NFL. Why in this situation is that GM coming to the press conference randomly right before training camp, and now this is just thrown on us like a bombshell? And by the way, the coach is seriously hurt.
Right.
Can we talk about that? We don't know how long he's going to take, and this isn't some trivial thing. He had a lot of injuries. I hope he recovers as fast as possible, but like talking about his job while he's recovering from something like this also feels unfair.
I want to say one more thing, because there's a lot of people that said, this isn't a big deal, a couple broken bones, he'll be back. John Lynch said he'll be back before week one. This is no big deal. That is not what John Lynch said. John Lynch said they expect him to be back before week one, but they don't know because it's a concussion. And by the way, I think it's hilarious that people are saying, oh, the 49ers say he'll be back, we're all good. All of a sudden now, we're going to trust the 49ers timeline on injuries with the most unpredictable injury of all time, a concussion. We're just going to say, oh, yeah, they say he'll be back, so we're good. When have the 49ers ever been good about injury timelines, ever? They're the worst team in the league about that stuff. So we're just going to take their word for it now? I mean, come on. We got to use our eyes and our ears and our brains here.
Yeah, maybe. I don't even want to get that far into it, Rob, because like you're right. Speculating on where and when he's going to come back, especially when he's dealing with something that can linger in a way a concussion can, and he's dealing with trauma too from a car crash. It's unfair to even start putting timelines on a person. Like, he should be back by this point. He should be healthy. Who knows? How do you know? I don't know.
But take all the time you need, Kyle.
But the point to talk about is that there is going to be something missing this offseason the longer he's out, because he's that good of a coach. And when he walks the sideline, people stand up straighter. When he's calling the plays, or when he's watching every practice detail and he's there and he's calling guys out in a meeting and all of those things, it's different. That's why he's one of the best coaches in the NFL. And they can go business as usual as long as possible, but this affects the team significantly. He sets the tone for what a good practice looks like. He sets the tone for all of those sorts of things. Now, they have other people who can take that task on, like the Fred Warners and the George Kittles, who are great players and great leaders. But this is their greatest leader. And that's weird to say because everyone questions his leadership, but that's the truth. He's the head coach. He's the CEO. He's the guy that can cut anybody at any time. They fear him. They love him.
There's no more important figure in the 49ers organization than Kyle Shanahan, and there's nothing more important than the brain inside Kyle Shanahan's head, and that is what is injured right now. So best of luck to you, Kyle Shanahan. Of course, get well soon. There's other angles of this that I want to break down, but I also want to talk about what actually took place at training camp today, because we got another injury scare that terrified me, Vish, and it was hopefully very short, but again, we got to wait and find out, and we'll break that down, and you'll hear Nick Bosa and Brock Purdy and all that stuff in 1 minute. But first,
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
Before we go to the next topic, can we touch on one thing real quick? Because I've seen this in the comment from R. Jeffrey a couple of times that it's not that big of a story and that it was, you know, that it's as big a story as Kittle going on podcast with Chris Sims. How is this not a big story that he's going to miss time? That's what I don't get. Like, we've seen this personal matter happen with coaches, right? We've seen coaches miss time before. Did Steve Kerr not deal with health issues and Luke Walton had to coach the Warriors at the beginning of 2016? Is it any of our business that Steve Kerr was dealing with health issues? Did we not find out right away that he's dealing with health issues and that he would be away from the Warriors? Like, we find this stuff out all the freaking time when these people get affected in a way that's going to stop them from doing their job. If he had a little fender bender and nobody got hurt, then yeah, no one cares. Yes. If he had a car crash, we don't need to know. He's not that big of a celebrity, but he is a big enough celebrity when he's allegedly having 40 stitches in his face, almost losing his right eye, severely concussed, broken nose, broken ribs, broken hand. That affects him from doing his job. And he's the head coach of the 49ers. We expect him to be doing his job at 100% starting today, which he didn't. He's not doing it.
No. When it causes you to miss time at your job, which is what we're talking about here, his football coaching, that's why it's news. The car accident alone isn't news. If it was a fender bender and nobody got hurt, and we don't need to know. We don't need to know Kyle Shanahan was in a fender bender car accident. It's the fact that it caused him to miss time is what makes it newsworthy. So I don't agree with R. Jeffrey there. Kittle going on a podcast with Sims is a bigger story. No, this Kyle Shanahan thing is the biggest story in the NFL right now.
I just can't understand, Rob, how it's not a big story that the head coach is not coaching starting training camp because he has a concussion. How is that not a big story?
It'd be interesting to see, you know, I'm sure eventually when Kyle gets back, he'll talk about his recovery and things like that. And I wonder if it will give him a new perspective on what so many players go through, what Nick Martin on his own team went through last year. Remember, Nick Martin was concussed in November and didn't play the rest of the regular season. So that tells you the seriousness that some of these concussions can bring.
Sorry, I killed your transition there.
One of the things I was so happy to hear and see about was that so far through the first practice and the second practice, Romello Hite looked really good. People were like, wow, he looks explosive. He's bending. And Nick Bosa went on KNBR and said this about Romello Hite, and it had me all fired up.
Rookie-wise, I've never seen a guy come in and get the scheme as quickly and seamlessly as he has. Even when vets come in who haven't played in this scheme, he's gotten it quicker than I did. Just the way he picked it up, it's just... seems like second nature to him, and he's super explosive. He's got a bag of tricks and pass rush that you could tell he's been coached well, and he's a little older, so that might be part of it for a rookie, but I think he's going to contribute pretty quick.
So I hear that from Nick Bosa, and I'm like, oh my God, maybe we actually got a good pass rusher and we'll have a compliment for Nick Bosa. It'd be awesome. And then I see this tweet from Jennifer Lee Chan and others that a cart came out for Romello Hite at the end of practice, and they were working on his arms and his leg. And I was like, are you kidding me? Are we really going to start 2026 with a Kyle Shanahan concussion and Romello Hite possibly being gone for the season? Now, it looks like right now that is not the case. They are saying officially they're calling it cramps, which honestly would make sense because they were working on his leg and his arms, and I don't know what else could have affected all three of those things at the same time, but I was going through it earlier today, Vish.
Yeah, me too. I was also excited because actually, not just Hite, for the much maligned 49ers draft class, it sounds like the first three rookies they drafted have gotten very strong reviews through the first 2 days of camp. Yes. Stribling has gotten strong reviews, Hite's gotten strong reviews, and so is Kalen Black, who me and you were secretly hoping would just be good because it was so annoying to read the reactions that everybody was so convinced he would be bad the moment they drafted him. Like, it was the worst pick in the history. So it was like I was just rooting for him to be good just to root against the people who hated on him because I found that annoying. Anyway, and they've all three gotten very good reviews. So it was initially like, what the hell is this classic? Like, do we have to just suffer constantly every time we decide we might have a good player and like them? But honestly, I think it's still a little too early to say on the parts. I think it's really positive to hear Bosa talk about him this way in the initial reviews, but I would say, Rob, I got to wait till those pads get on.
Yes.
That's when we got to find out about him. And so that's when my – and oh, Jalaru in the – Jalaru in the chat is right with me. That's when we're saving judgment for how Romello Height looks. Because especially with the type of athlete he is, I'm not shocked that he looks really explosive when the pads are off. And so that's what I want to see, how strong and explosive he looks like with the full practice with pads, especially if he's cramping. Because I want to see what type of shape he's in too.
I – have said this, but I need to keep repeating it because not everybody hears everything you say on every show. All I'm looking for in training camp is a list of things for me to watch once the preseason starts and I could see the games for myself. That's it. So if I keep hearing, especially if you hear the same thing over and over again, good or bad, by the way, but if I keep hearing, hey, Romello Height looks really explosive and really good and he's got a little bit of a pass rush back, great. I put that down in my notes. I keep it in my head. And when the games start, I'm watching Romello Height. Does what I see line up and match up with what people have been saying about him? And if it does, I get excited. If it doesn't, I reserve my excitement a little bit. So that's all I'm looking for at training camp. Positive or negative is just things to watch. I'm not saying Romello Height's going to be a Hall of Famer or a Pro Bowler or anything. All I'm saying is I'm going to pay more attention to him now.
I agree with you. And I want to say this. With all due respect to everybody who goes out there and covers training camp and shares their opinion, the point is covering training camp and sharing opinions on 90% of players in the practice is really hard. There's a few really obvious players that do a big play or a boo-boo where the result of the play very obviously results in a player either making a mistake or making the play, right? When a receiver catches the ball over a corner, it's really easy to report what happened and share that as a statistic. Or when a guy looks really strong or big, like really natural things, I think the reporters are always really good at telling us the obvious, right? Like rookie George Kittle, this guy looks really good as a rookie. They all got that one right. They all could tell. Once you get past the obvious, Rob, in the margins, training camp reporting is kind of useless to me. Because I've also noticed it's gotten to a point where, hey, someone will ask, hey, how is so-and-so reporting? How is so-and-so report looking? Excuse me. Immediately in the next practice, it's like, oh, so-and-so did da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then it's like immediately that's how his camp is going or that's what it is. It's not possible to watch all 90 players. The coaches aren't even able to watch all 90 players during the live practice. That's why they go study the film of the practice right after the practice because they want to see every rep and evaluate every rep fairly. Now you're telling me guys with binoculars 50 feet away because the 49ers sometimes practice in the field all the way out there are fully able to tell you how, you know, a guy who plays three technique for the 49ers is doing on 11-on-11s. I don't know. I don't know. I think people have a hard time seeing if he's playing the right gap when they're watching the game live. Now you're telling me they're going to do it from 200 feet away. And so that's where I think some of this reporting, too, you do have to take it with a grain of salt, not because people aren't doing a good job. It's because it's really hard for them to see a live play with no replay, with all the moving parts and all the moving variables in a practice and tell you exactly how one individual or another individual is doing. And so oftentimes I do think we get sold a story in training camp, Rob, that turns into we get really emotional when the team cuts a guy that we're like convinced that, hey, every reporter told us that guy was having a great camp. It might not be the kind of camp that the team was looking for or what they needed from that sort of guy.
I agree with you. And I second what you said, being able to watch the training camp alone with so many guys on the field, especially so many guys you might not be familiar with because it's 90-man rosters, is a very difficult job. The fact that the 49ers make you stand a billion miles away from everything going on and you need binoculars to see makes it an even more difficult job for everybody that is going and trying to report what they see at training camp. So I agree with everything you said, but that's also why I like stuff from the players, right? Because they are they're there. Mm-hmm. Right there. So they have obviously a much better view and opinion and things like that of guys who are good, bad, and otherwise. Now, they're never going to say, this guy sucks, right? They're never going to be like, oh, this rookie that we took in the fourth round, he's terrible. He ain't it. Like, of course, they're never going to say that. So you do have to take everything with a grain of salt. But again, if I can't be excited on July 27th, man, well, I mean, I waited all summer for this, right? This is what we all waited for to get back to training camp. Can I be happy for a little while, for a two
days? No. You're right on, Rob. And I think that player's angle is the right point because there's two angles to it, right? after a couple weeks of practice, players will start to talk, and that's where the reporters are around, and they might be like, yo, this guy's killing it at practice. Those are the guys you write down, because the players and coaches really know mm-hmm. who's killing it at practice. Those are the guys that'll start to get the buzz, and you'll see all the reporters consensusly start saying, yeah, this guy's had a really strong camp, and you'll go back and look at their practice reports, and they haven't mentioned him for the last five practices, and you're like, oh, how did that come from? It'll be one of those situations. Exactly what you described, right? What Bosa said about Romello height, regardless of how he holds up physically, which I think the strength in the pads to me is going to be the biggest question, at least from an IQ standpoint, how he's picking up the defense, how he's able to get on the field quickly. It looks like it's all positive. So I agree with you.
In the positive department, take a listen to Brock Purdy talking about top draft pick Daizon Stribling.
Dude is a baller, and I mean that. It's hard to say that, you know, for a rookie right off the jump, but just seeing him run routes, going up against defenders and OTAs and then camp yesterday, like, he's a great route runner. He's smart. He's learned the playbook really quick, which is awesome. And on top of that, like, you can see his strength, too, when he's going up against guys and creating separation. I'm like, all right, this guy's a strong receiver, and so I'm excited to see what he does, but, you know, all of us, all of the quarterbacks in the room were like, all right, this guy's going to be a guy that's going to come in and play.
Okay. And now with Christian Kirk sidelined for, you know, 2 to 4 weeks, possibly, we don't know. He's got a calf strain. The opportunity is there for Daizon Stribling to, you know, make his statement that he deserves to get in the lineup and get in the lineup early as wide receiver 3.
Yeah, sorry. I'm really laughing at Bo Adams' comment. He said, y'all ever notice everyone else has gear and jerseys and stuff behind them and Vish has pillows? That's crazy judgment. But back to your point about Daizon Stribling, Rob, I agree with you. And I thought the first thing that stood out to me when I saw the videos of him in camp was just how big he looked in a 49ers uniform, right? Because it's the first time you get to see how their bodies look, and that's pause. You're kind of judging, right, how they look physically, like how strong their legs look, all of these sorts of things. And Daizon Stribling looks like the type of receiver that would scare corners with the ball in his hands, because it's not just the speed, which he knew he had. He looks like a packed 215, like all muscle, like well put together, well built, like no college lingering frame changes he's going to need. He looks built. And then for Brock Purdy to mention that he learned the playbook quickly, that's another huge check for him. And so I think everything is trending that it looks like he'll get on the field early. And if he gets on the field early, I'd have to think he'll contribute early, because usually guys who get on the field in this offense do contribute, especially early, because they're not put on the field early if they're not thought of as contributors. And I think his speed will be a difference maker. The speed with the ball in his hands, it was something they missed in terms of a ball carrier the whole of last year. And it sounds like he's been as fast as advertised every time the reporters have had to look at him, which is the other point you want to check off, because it's really easy to see explosive in a practice. Like, you don't have to be Kyle Shanahan to see explosive compared to other athletes. Like, me, you, and everybody can see that. And they said, it sounds like everybody has agreed, yeah, he does look that explosive. And dude, the body, like, he's freaking yoked. I've seen the Crabtree comparisons. I don't see it outside of number 15. Like, maybe the long arms in the frame, like, this guy's body, the big hands too. Yeah. Crabtree was kind of an oddly framed guy. It's hard to compare other athletes to me to Crabtree, because he wasn't that tall, but he had those insane arms and hands. This guy is just a huge guy to me. This guy's got your classic receiver, 6'3", 215, cut build. You know, like Julio Jones had this build. He's not Julio Jones, just this build. Andre Johnson had this build. Dante Moncrief had this build, if you want a guy that's not as good. There's a guy from Baylor. Right. Okay, fine.
I believe Stribling has like 10-inch hands, which is, I think Kyle Posey said in a tweet that that's bigger than Trent Williams, which is wild because Trent Williams is such a massive human being. But Brock Purdy said at the podium at one point,
shoulders too, right? Because the shoulders kind of droop over that Owen style. They're like nice and wide.
Brock Purdy said at the podium today, the speed is back. Like he said, he talked about, and the 49ers as a group this offseason talked about third level throws and how they were kind of missing from the team last season because they just didn't have anybody that was fast enough to do it. With Stribling in the fold, obviously, Jacob Cowing is very fast. I know he didn't get a lot to play, but he could potentially be on the field where he wasn't on the field last year. Ricky Pearsall is not slow by any stretch of the imagination. If he can stay healthy and get on the field, the speed being back will be a huge blessing to this 49ers team because they did not get explosive plays last season. I have it in my notes. Let me bring it up right here. The 49ers had 29 plays that gained 25 or more yards. That was tied for fourth worst in the league.
No, for sure. And I think they need help to do that in the run game, which he should help with his blocking. I'm glad you also hit on Pearsall because Pearsall is fast too. It's just a different kind of athlete with how they use their speed. Pearsall is more like a finesse athlete, so his speed is more deceptive. This is power speed. This is like powerful explosion from Dejon Stribling. Like when he's moving and he's going with the way his body is, like people are going to be scared to tackle him. He's going to be like, someone put Metcalf in the comments. I don't love DK. I know Niners fans don't love DK, but it's kind of that freight train with the ball in his hands. And I think he explodes much more. Like his first three steps are going. It's Christian Watson is maybe similar type speed. Watson's probably faster, but that type of just like going and just powerful stride and going. Pearsall doesn't have that. I'm excited. It sounds like he's been everything that's as advertised, which means that he could probably be a good player for them. And they just need a couple of long touchdowns where they get him in space and he can turn the corner and just no one can catch him. The way Watson scores.
We could use some of that. Please give me that turn. Give me somebody that could turn the corner. Although, for what it's worth, again, huge grain of salt with all this. Christian McCaffrey supposedly looks very spry out there. So hopefully that can bounce back a little bit too. Why not? We're in the season.
Right. And apparently James and Kalen Black have looked good.
Yes.
We're going to go off training camp reports, which we were excited about both of those guys coming in.
Good. Share the ball. There's plenty of footballs to go around. This team gave Christian McCaffrey 450 touches last year, including the playoffs. There is no reason why that cannot be shared by all three of those guys. Another thing I want to get to, and there's a trade rumor that possibly impacts the 49ers, we'll get to in a little bit.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
You and I have talked about this in terms of the personality of the team and what maybe was lacking in recent years, particularly on the defense. And D'Amandore Lenore said something today about Dre Greenlaw that I thought perfectly summed it up. Take a listen to Lenore.
He's the bully. We got our bully back. I was mad when he left because I know the intensity he played with. He gonna go 110% every game, every practice, and I know that he gonna give it his all.
You and I have talked about the fact that the 49ers lost a little bit of that when he wasn't there. He talked about it. Brock Purdy talked about like, oh, shoot, you know, I drop back to pass and it's Warner and Greenlaw in the middle of the field again. I think having Greenlaw and that attitude back in the building will be massive for this defense.
Yeah, I agree with you. I totally agree with you. And it'll be massive for their practice intensity, their practice energy, their practice physicality. And we've talked about how physical their practices are in the past in negative ways, but it's also a positive because when the Niners are that team in November, December, January, when they've made their runs, the thing that they are very underratedly is the most physical team in football. They out-physical everybody. Teams can't compete with the Niners' physicality. And so I definitely am with you there. For some reason, I thought you were going to go the Jair Brown angle because it sounds like he's had a couple of strong first two days of practice. And it was what we touched on in our previous show coming into training camp, that could be one of the players that plays with a little more confidence with a guy like Raheem Morris. And that's good enough to be a starter in this scheme, even though he's not played well at all.
Well, what we're hearing in terms of the defense is that it is a lot different than what it has been in recent years. Trent Williams talked about it being different. Fred Warner talked about it being different. And Brock Purdy kind of really broke it down a little bit. Take a listen to Brock talking about what the Niners defense looks like to this point.
It is different. You know, in camp, it's usually the four down traditional stud defensive lineman with three linebackers and a strong quarter shell defense. And now it's like, all right, we got five down. He gives us all these different kind of looks, and the shell is always changing and stuff. So Raheem's done a good job with, I think, trying to, you know, disguise things against the quarterback, but also the techniques that the DBs are playing with now too. That's a whole nother thing. So I like it. It feels, you know, for me, it's fun because going into the season, it's, I feel like this is the kind of stuff that we're starting to see more in the NFL. And so for us on offense, it gives us good practice and good reps and stuff. And you got to win in your one-on-one matchups and things like that. So I think overall across the board, it's been good work on both sides of the ball.
The reason I was so hoping that the 49ers would hire Jim Schwartz is because this is exactly the kind of stuff I wanted Jim Schwartz to do on defense. Change it up, different looks, different fronts, all that stuff. To hear that Raheem Morris is doing this too, I think this is awesome. I love it. And it makes me feel so much more like we are going to actually get some different looks from this 49ers defense this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it sounds like Raheem Morris is also sticking to coaching the Niners in the way he's been coaching defenses since his Rams days, rather than the way he coached defenses before that, which was a lot more Seattle scheme, given that he has a background from Tampa 2, and then, of course, coaching the Seattle defense with Dan Quinn in Atlanta, and or Seattle-style defense, excuse me, with Dan Quinn in Atlanta. And so I'm interested to see what it looks like and how he ends up utilizing a Fred Warner or a Nick Bosa, because a lot of why the 49ers have been so rigid to the Seattle scheme is that scheme best utilizes both Fred Warner and Nick Bosa. And Fred Warner is the perfect linebacker for that scheme and the way he plays in that scheme. And Bosa in that wide nine alignment, it's a completely dominant player for you that changes the game in all facets. And so I'm really excited to see how this whole thing plays out. I'm excited to see how they do. I still stand by, I think they're going to leave a little bit to be desired statistically, but they're going to be very good in key moments. Key third downs, you're going to know how to get stops. They're going to know how to create turnovers as well.
If there was echo on that video, I apologize. I didn't hear any echo. Did you hear echo on that, Vish?
Yeah, there was, Rob. I was trying to mute myself, but it wasn't me. It was you.
Oh.
Yeah, it's all your fault.
I'm sorry about that. That's annoying, and I apologize. If I'd heard it, I would have stopped it, because that's annoying.
No, that's totally fine, Rob.
I'll figure out what the deal was there. But anyway, but yeah, if the defense is really good, and the fact that Kyle, I'm sure nothing is happening that Kyle doesn't want to happen, but the fact that Kyle is gone because of the concussion and the injuries, I'm sure he's probably like, Raheem, you do the defense, man. It's your show. I mean, he did that with Robert Saleh when Kyle was around. So I'm sure Raheem Morris is like, he's going crazy with what he wants to do and implement on his defense.
Absolutely. And I want to say something about Raheem Morris too, because I actually think he's an unbelievable person for them to have around the building. At this time, one of the things I've seen commended about Raheem Morris by all the coaches and people he works with is just that he's positive all the time. No matter how life goes, he's just kind of like an upbeat guy that has a smile, cracks a joke, like anything that happens, that's what he brings to a room. And that's like, when you work with people, regardless of how they do their job, and you feel the kind of pressure these players and coaches feel, that's an unbelievable human to be around. And that's why Raheem Morris is so well regarded by coaches and players that he's coached and coached with and, you know, coached for, because he does have that sort of personality. And that's the thing people commend before they talk about the X's and O's and the rest of the things he brings to the table as a coach. I think given the traumatic nature of this situation, given how shocking it is, given how difficult it can be for them to handle, having a guy like Raheem Morris who can take things in stride, knows how to kind of get people to compartmentalize, get people to focus on the now, he can also do those things. It's really valuable to have. And it's really valuable for Chris Forrester as well, because he may be a veteran coach and he may know how to handle a lot of these things from a maturity standpoint in life. It's still overwhelming to become the head coach of the 49ers and deal with some of the management parts that come with being a head coach. And we remember when Mike McDonald left, it wasn't that Mike McDonald left this replacement in the run game that Forrester couldn't have, because we knew Forrester was also a key game planner in it. But the technology was where Mike McDaniel helped Chris Forrester. And that's where I wonder if Morris will be valuable to help with some of the finer management and technology parts of the head coaching job that are probably going to be difficult for him to come by. I'm sure John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan, they'll all be throwing hands where they can while Shanahan fully recovers.
Well, and it's nice for the staff too, you know, as experienced as Forrester is. He's never been a head coach before. Raheem Morris has been a head coach before. Matt Eberflus is
multiple times.
He's been a head coach before. So having two guys that have done it, you know, you don't know what you don't know when you're entering into a position you've never been in before. But now they have guys on the staff that do know. And so I'm sure he'll lean on their experience as well. One more thing about the defense. I don't know if you caught this, Fish. This got me excited. In the Athletic article about Fred Warner's injury, there's one line in there. It said, this offseason, Warner has been working on taking advantage of one-on-one pass rush opportunities against running backs, which he hasn't been asked to do frequently. Johnny Holland hopes Warner will have many more chances to rush against opposing running backs this season. If Raheem Morris is going to start letting Fred Warner blitz, I'm all for that too, baby. Blitz those linebackers. Nick Martin, if all he's good at is running really fast and tackling really hard, let him blitz. Don't put him in coverage, man. Bring it on.
I'm interested to see how good he is at blitzing. I feel like Warner has been a good pass rusher when the little I've seen him blitz in the past. The only reason I'm interested in it is more from like a football nerd standpoint, because this was the one thing I thought Navarro Bowman did better than Patrick Willis, who's maybe the best linebacker I've ever seen in my life. And I thought the one thing Navarro Bowman did better was Navarro Bowman was an unbelievable blitzer. He had that wicked spin move on running backs that was something special. Willis wasn't as good a blitzer. I want to see how Warner ranks and how I feel about Warner, because all I think those were the two guys, you know, for me growing up, and then Warner is the other guy. So
I would love to see him.
But yeah,
if you're watching on the stream, I have the graphic up. These are sacks from linebackers while Raheem Morris was the defensive coordinator.
It's slightly misleading though, right? Because they play a three-man defensive line, so they might have counted James Pierce as an outside linebacker when he's an edge rusher. Leonard Floyd, I think, had 10 sacks in one of those years. He might have been counted as a linebacker as well, which it won't be the case for the Niners, right? Like Nick Bosa will be seen as a defensive lineman.
But the 49ers are going to run those kind of fronts where...
Sure. But I'm just saying in terms of how this was charted, I don't know if this is just the off-ball linebackers, like how many sacks Ernest Jones had a couple years back on the Rams for Raheem Morris, or if this is like, hey, James Pierce had 10 sacks last year and he's 10 of those 19 and a half, you know?
I went off, for transparency, I went off Pro Football Reference, so whatever they had listed. But the point is, the 49ers don't get double-digit sacks from linebackers. They haven't gotten double-digit sacks from linebackers in the entire Shanahan era. And clearly, Raheem Morris does. If you want to say it's lower than, you know, certain 21 and a half, okay, fine. But it's still way more than what the 49ers have gotten from their
linebackers. Well, that was going to be like my underlying point. I'm not sure if they'll get double digits even from their people that we consider linebackers, and it'll all depend on alignment and all of that. But positionally, there are players that we consider linebackers. 10 plus sacks between Warner and Greenlaw, who primarily they'll probably have those two on the field, like that's like nearly
that would
impossible.
Be huge,
but if that's they, hard. That's not likely.
If they could get 5 sacks each, that would be incredible.
They could get 5 sacks each, man. Like, you probably have both in the defensive player of the year conversation.
For context, Fred Warner's never had more than 3 sacks in a season. Like, they
Which makes sense
because he's so good at coverage. You never want to take him out of coverage. I'm not saying that as criticism at all.
Right. And you're also like not giving those two guys that they're positionally not getting that many pass rush opportunities. Whereas somebody like Leonard Floyd, even though he played linebacker, was rushing the passer 80% of the job. Only 20% of it was dropping in coverage
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this. Now, without further commercial interruption, the conclusion of this episode of the 49ers Gold Standard podcast.
All right, there's one more thing that we need to get to, and this was not something that was on my radar, but it became news a little while ago, and that is a star player has put in a trade request. And for once, it's not a star 49ers player putting in a trade request. According to Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, Vita Vea, defensive tackle from the Bucks, has requested a trade. And Ted Wynn says that Vea wants to go to a California team or the Raiders. Vish, I'm going to, you know, spinning John Lynch gif you here. Should the 49ers call the Buccaneers?
Yeah. I don't know how the finances work out. But usually this is the best time to try and trade for a star player because you're probably buying as cheap as you could possibly buy when you're trying to, you know, trade for a star player in the middle of training camp. I don't know what kind of contract, those sorts of things, but this is a game changer. I think this guy changes how defenses play. I think he changes how offensive have to play defense. Says he takes two gaps by himself, by his sheer size. We saw the advantage of having this sort of dominant players that are difficult to move in the interior of defensive line, what it did for Seattle and some of the other best teams in the playoffs last year. Look, maybe if I knew what the costs were a little bit better, I might say no, but just on paper, yeah, I'd want to go find out and try to get this guy. This is a game-changing football player to me. This is part of why Tampa Bay has a good defense every year.
Now he's 31 years old, which I know, you know, 49ers keep getting all these old guys. People don't like that. I'm just pointing that out. He played all 17 games last year. He played 16 games in 2024. He played 15 games in 2023. He has been relatively healthy for the past 3 years. He's an absolute monster. The 49ers have a lot of cap room this year, but next year they're underwater right now. He's going to want a new deal. A lot of defensive tackles.
Yeah, those are the parts, right, which kind of ruin it. But if you're just talking about next year, Rob, for now, you're probably on the same page, right?
I mean, I don't know what it would take to get him, but you have to pick up the phone. You have to make that call, right? I mean, imagine Osa Odighizuwa and Vita Vea in the middle of that defense for the 49ers. Yeah, sure. Are you kidding me? With Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw behind it?
Also, if you are playing more of these five-man fronts and all of these penny fronts that Raheem Morris brings to the table, do you know how valuable it is to have this guy at the center of your defense? Do you know what this guy will do to the math? It's like you got to go check it out. Like he's that big and dominant. Also, Rob, we always talk about it. Having big people in this sport is just an advantage. The more big people you can have, the more you get. That's why Trent Baalke, everywhere he leaves, even though he drafts poorly, that team ends up being able to rebuild it because he drafts a lot of big people. And eventually, if you draft a lot of big people, you have a good team on both lines of scrimmages, which allows the next coach to come make the playoffs because, you know, Baalke sucks.
Mike UA says, not even Rob could fit through the gap between Vita Vea and Osa Odighizuwa. Mean, but also funny. So
wow, that's great, Mike.
It would be an unbelievable addition. Now, the trade, we don't know. Am I giving up a first-round pick for a 31-year-old defensive tackle?
So what it would do to Fred Warner?
I mean, God.
You're keeping Warner clean, and you're keeping contact off of him because they're going to keep him clean on the bodies that get to him and hit him. Maybe you're adding a year or two to Warner's career.
Here's the thing. The Rams are going to get him if you don't.
No, come on.
He picked up the phone.
You don't. I think the. No way.
I mean, I have no idea, but it just seems like the way they operate.
It seems like a Chargers play. This seems like the kind of guy the Chargers would go trade for.
And I wonder if Tampa Bay is going to trade him. Would they prefer to trade him to the AFC? You would think, right? Just because theoretically the Niners and Bucks could play each other in the playoffs, but. I don't know. I also don't know how the Rams would fit Vita Vea under the...
I mean, to be fair, like, I'd like to think that the Rams can't get everybody, but the Rams try and get everybody, so...
Don't even put that challenge out there, man. I don't want to put that to the test, because Les Snead is a freaking dark wizard, so who the hell knows? But, yeah, as Greeny points out, Vita Vea following Mike Evans. Maybe we could get Mike to recruit him. Figure that out. I have no idea.
Right.
But... it would be fascinating if it happened. It's out there again. Ted Wynn said he reportedly wants to play for a California team. Who knows? But you know what? You pick up the phone. The Niners always say, we talk about anybody, we listen on anybody, and this is one that absolutely should be listening about.
Yeah, it's one of those weird deals where the details of the deal actually do matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is a deal that's too rich for Vita Vea at this point, especially with how the 49ers are concepting the build of the roster, not just this year, but over the subsequent years. And then there's also a price where this is Vita Vea. And if he's there for the 49ers for just next year, like, this is a complete game changer. And like, you need to go find out what that price is. And if you can pay it, because there's also a price completely worth paying. Even if you don't feel like you can rework his deal and you're going to have to let him walk when that deal ends. If I don't even know anything about his contract. So, but yeah, I think this deal started when we started on this show. I'd seen people putting it in the comments, and that's kind of how I came to know.
I like this tweet from Dieter Kurtenbach of the Dieter and Hutch podcast, who wrote, "It's all funny money, but the Niners are roughly $5 million over the cap for 2027. If you don't factor in Ayuk's money, they can add a $20 million a year player. But let's be honest, defensive tackle is a non-premium position, and that would use up a good deal of their expendable money." And then the next tweet right below it is, "But it'd be pretty sick, right?"
Yeah, I will say I disagree on the defensive tackle being a non-premium position.
I knew you would.
Yeah, I'm starting to come around that it's premium. I mean, you see the dominant defensive lines that go to the Super Bowl every year. It's not just an outside pass rush. They have a dominant interior pass rush.
Yes.
Too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's easily an argument to be made that the Chiefs don't win either Super Bowl against the 49ers without Chris Jones.
Totally. Chris, no doubt. No doubt. Yeah.
By the way, I'm just looking over the cap. Vea does not have, he's got a void year next year, but this is it for him. So that's why he wants a new deal. Plus, we saw Jeffrey Simmons and some other guys get paid. You know, he wants to get paid again. I don't blame him. So yeah, I'm sure wherever he goes, he'll end up getting a new contract, but definitely worth investigating.
I got one more angle for you, too, on why I think defensive tackle is premium. It's the run game stuff. Now that everybody at least bases their run game, even if they don't do it fully, their run game is based off of wide zone is the first install of their run game, and that movement with their line that they're trying to create to then build everything off of it that you need to stop. I think interior players are just more dominant and disruptive in the run game, because that is kind of, you have to set the edge. And so you're almost taking those TFLs and some of those things that edge players can do in a run game out of the game for them, because you're putting the responsibility that they got to win their gap for the team to win that run game. And so it's one of those things where I do think, like, yeah, a dominant interior player, like, I think Vita Vea would make that sort of difference. You know, I think he would.
We were talking about, you know, will the Rams go for him? Apparently, Sean McVay told Kay Adams, quote, "We feel good about our group," when asked about
a possible trade for Vita Vea.
Don't believe it. He's lulling us into a false sense of security. I know.
To be honest, I also would feel good about their group, though, if I had their group. They have a good group, whether they have Vita Vea or not. It's annoying.
Sean McVay is sitting there like, have you seen our defensive line?
Right. We have Kobe Turner. We have Byron Young. Miles Garrett. Aaron Donald might come back.
Yeah, we're about to get a multiple-time defensive player of the year back out of retirement as well. I'm sure he's not losing any sleep over it if the 49ers were to get Vita Vea.
He's doing a test run where he gets to just practice with the team, wear pads, use the facility, rehab, do anything he wants, but he's not part of the team, guys. This isn't illegal in any way because he's not practicing. He's not in the NFL.
Well, but also they hold his rights too. So it's not like,
yeah, but Rob, if he practices a month before he actually is officially reinstated, is that fair?
Yeah, why? What's the problem? They're not paying him. He's voluntarily doing it.
Yeah, but the legalities, Rob. Anything to tie the Rams up in the legalities.
You just want the Rams busted.
It's actually like genuinely frustrating because like none of this is won on paper. But also, like, they've put together something that's, like, again, it's frustrating.
It could be very good. It could also not work out. We've seen that just as many times in the NFL. So. But anyway, that's going to do it for this edition of the show. Day two of training camp in the books. Rest up, Kyle Shanahan. Rest up, Romello Height. Hydrate. We got to get rid of those muscle cramps, baby. We don't need those anymore. That was like the scare of the day. It was terrifying for me. And hopefully we don't have any more scares like that. I don't need to hear about the cart. Retire the cart at 49ers training camp. We don't need.
Wait, no, don't retire the cart, Rob. We don't want them walking.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I hear you.
Thank you to all our Golden Ticket members, all our YouTube channel members. We greatly, greatly appreciate you. You're day in, day out supporting me, and I will never, ever, ever take that for granted. Thanks, everybody. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. Please like this video. Subscribe to the channel if this is your first time checking us out. You're getting back into the swing of things because the season is here. Please subscribe. It is totally free. We're live every single weekday. We do 49ers in 5 news update on the audio side. You can get that wherever you get your audio podcasts. We got a brand new newsletter that just started last week, Vish. For anybody that is interested, I'll put the link in the description. It comes out on Saturdays. It's a 2-minute read. It's real quick. It's just a primer for what you need to know about the game or the week to come for the 49ers. Like I said, it's totally free. It'll always be totally free. Just started it, but trying to, you know, expand the empire a little bit here on the show. Thank you, everybody. Vish, good to hear from you. Good to break down actual football stuff, and we'll talk next week.